And joining us this morning is lawyer, author, Ron Feirstein, who has written a book called A Triumph of Genius, Edwin Land, Polaroid, and the Kodak Patent War. And I don't know if sometimes people think, I want to read a book about a patent war, but obviously it's a lot more than that, even though Ron was involved, I guess. Ron, you were involved in the legal part of this when that patent war was going on, correct?
That's correct. Good morning, Bruce. I was a young lawyer on the team that represented Polaroid in one of the most historic legal cases over technology in American history, which was a battle between Polaroid and Kodak over instant photography technology, you know, the one-step photography where you could snap the shutter and have the picture develop in your hand seconds later. But really, the book is a multifaceted book because it really it tells the story of a really great man by the name of Edwin Land, who was the father of that technology, the founder of Polaroid, but one of America's great inventors that pretty much no one has ever heard of.
Well, when I had used to see and I hear, you know, they call it the Polaroid Land camera, I thought Land was sort of like an adjective as opposed to a proper name of a person. I didn't realize that at the time.
Well, I'm with you, Bruce, because I didn't either. And I thought it referred to the ground and maybe they were distinguishing this camera from an aerial camera or an underwater camera. But it turned out when I got involved in this lawsuit, I found out that Land actually was a man and one of America's great inventors. In fact, he died third on the list behind only Thomas Edison and one of Edison's colleagues on the list of American inventors with 535 patents to his name.
Now, if I understand correctly, you actually, when you worked on the case, you actually got to meet him or you were sort of close to him at that time?
Yes. Well, I somehow... through a chain of circumstances, I became the young lawyer assigned to him, and I worked with him for several years during the pendency of the litigation. I helped prepare him to be a witness because he was our star witness at the trial in Boston, and I actually wrote the outline for his testimony and so on and so forth, and really got to know him and work with him. And although he was a bit of a recluse and he could be tough on some people, he seemed to like me and we got along fine. And at the end of the whole thing, he autographed one of his patents for me, which is a very dear memento.
Is there patent memorabilia out there that I'm aware of? Is there a whole market for something like that?
Well, I doubt it, but this is something I would never sell. It's framed proudly on my wall, and it's just, you know, it just brings back fantastic memories of getting a really unique chance to work with one of America's most brilliant technologists and someone that we've never, you know, few people have ever heard of.
Well, let's talk a little bit about it. I was looking at some of the different things. He's there on the moon with Neil Armstrong. He is there when they dropped a bomb on Japan. I mean, his technology is all a part of it. Talk about some of those moments in history.
Those are some other the bomb scenario that you referred to was the pilots, the crewmen on the Enola Gay, looking at back at the bomb through special Polaroid goggles that they made. Polaroid actually was not founded on photography, interestingly enough. Land's first invention was the practical polarizer, basically a thin sheet of plastic that could take the glare out of light. Physicists had known about polarization, excuse me, for decades, in fact, centuries. But for hundreds of years, the only material they could find that could take the glare out of light were big pieces of rock, crystals, and so on. Well, when he was 19 years old, Land came up with a thin piece of plastic that could do that. And from that came Polaroid sunglasses and goggles and polarizing lenses for cameras and a million other applications. And that's the invention upon which he founded Polaroid and built it into the equivalent of a $250 million company by the time he was 25.
Yeah, let's take that. You said he invented this 19. He's not even, you know, out of his teens. Obviously a gifted, and as you have here, a genius listed on that. Was he just unique in his family? Was there some upbringing that brought him to that ability?
He came from a family of immigrants. His grandfather and his father came over from Russia at the end of the 19th century. His father was about 5 years old when he came over with Land's grandfather, and they grew up in around Connecticut. And the one thing that the family instilled in all the kids was, you know, education. But Land dropped out of Harvard because he got enthralled with physics and optics as a young child. He just turned out to be a very inquisitive young man and followed a path of science and research for the whole of his life.
You make a reference or at least a comparison to who we know, Steve Jobs. Talk about the two and how they're similar or even maybe a little difference between
them.
Well,
I say that Edwin Land was the original Steve Jobs, and in fact, Steve Jobs acknowledged that. Steve Jobs talked about Land all the time and acknowledged the fact that he revered him and patterned most of his career after Steve Jobs. And there are all kinds of parallels. For example, we're all familiar with how Apple introduces new products at shareholders meetings every year, and everybody gets all excited about it, and the press cover it like crazy. Well, that's something that Land started back in the 60s and did every year, and there was always a frenzy around the Polaroid shareholders meetings. And it's clearly something that Land copied from that Jobs copied from Land. And also, if you just talk philosophy, when in 1972, when Polaroid put out the SX70 instant camera, which is the one that everybody knows about with that square image with the white border around it and a little wider at the bottom, well, when they put that one out, people asked him, how much market research did you do before you committed $500 million of your company's profits to the research and development of this product? And Land said, we didn't do any, because we don't do market research. We give people things that they can't even imagine of. And that's, if that sounds familiar, it is, because that's exactly the mantra that Steve Jobs instilled in Apple.
Of course, you had Steve Jobs with his black turtleneck, Edwin Land more of the suit and tie kind of guy, I guess.
Exactly. Well, different generation. Exactly,
too. One thing I was noticing is talk about similarities, or at least something that jumped out at me. It talks about when they were developing this idea of a camera, and we'll get to that little story in a moment, but they came up with a pod. And I'm thinking, well, there you go. You got a pod in the Polaroid, and of course, Apple known for their pod, in a sense. There's an interesting...
Well, exactly. That is an interesting play on words. The pod, of course, in the Polaroid context, was a little envelope of the processing chemical that would be on the film unit. And then when the film unit was ejected from the camera, that pod, the film unit would pass through two steel rollers, which would burst the pod and spread that processing fluid over the surface of the film unit.
Now, tell the story. Is this legend about his daughter? They're taking camera, they're pictures of an activity, and his daughter turns to him and wants to know why she can't see the pictures now. Is that sort of the impulse for this?
As far as I can tell, it's true, because he repeated it many times over the course of his career and his life in interviews. The story is that Polaroid had grown to be a huge company during World War II because, for a number of reasons. Obviously, sunglasses, other products was successful, and it was doing a lot of business with the U.S. government, making all kinds of devices for the military in the World War II effort. But with the war winding down, Land was concerned about the future of his company, and he was really looking for a new technology to dive into. And he was on vacation with his daughter in New Mexico. They went for a walk, and they were taking pictures with a normal camera. And I'm sure many of your listeners will remember in the old days, so to speak, when you finished a roll of film in your camera, you had to take the film out, and then you had to ship it off to a laboratory where the negative had to be developed in a whole series of steps done at perfect temperatures with certain chemicals. And then once the negative was developed, they would shine light through the negative onto a piece of photographic film and then have to develop that photographic film and dry it and stabilize it and then ship you back the pictures weeks later, right? Well, Land's daughter was very, very upset by that. She wanted to see the pictures right away, and she's tugging on her dad's pants. Daddy, why do I have to wait? Why can't I see these pictures right away? Well, other fathers may have just dismissed that as a small kid, you know, making unrealistic demands, but it sparked something in Land's mind, and at that moment, he committed himself to coming up with a photographic system, a camera and film combination that could provide you with an image within seconds or minutes.
Now, when he was doing that and got into the film camera business, Kodak was a partner in a sense. How did it all turn the other way where they ended up going to battle over patents?
Well, that's really the gist of the book, to be honest. And as you pointed out earlier, this is not so much about a legal case as it is about the relationship between these two companies over 60 years. It almost is like an opera in a sense, because they started off as mentor and protege, because Kodak really helped Polaroid. Polaroid wouldn't have existed without Kodak's help on a bunch of fronts. But they ended up as bitter enemies like 60 years later. And to watch that relationship develop over the years and then turn sour and end up in court is really a great story, and forms a big part of what the book is about.
Now, that one camera that kind of started it, where Kodak decides, you know, this whole kind of instant thing where I don't even have to have this extra peel-off step, I just kind of have the picture come out, and I sit there and shake it a little bit, wait, and all of a sudden, there's the image that develops, I guess, is kind of where the patent sort of the thing kind of changed. And there's a camera, I guess, that Kodak made that was very similar.
You're exactly right. That was the turning point, was when Polaroid, when Land, see, Kodak had manufactured the negatives for all of Polaroid's film, starting in the 40s all the way into the 60s. And in fact, Polaroid was Kodak's second largest corporate customer, second only to the cigarette manufacturers, for whom Kodak made the small white plastic tubes they turned into cigarette filters. Well, it was all fine. Both companies were doing great. Kodak was making a fortune working with Polaroid, supplying them with negatives. And they were happy with that, because they never saw Polaroid's system as competition for their dominance of the amateur market, the conventional photography market, until Land showed them the prototype for what became SX-70, the one you described, which is the one I mentioned earlier, where for the first time the picture came out of the camera and developed in front of you. You didn't have to time it. You didn't have to peel it apart. You didn't have to coat the print with a stabilizer, nothing. There was no garbage left over at the end. You just watched the picture develop miraculously in your hand. And when Kodak saw that, they for the first time became concerned that this might be the thing that could finally challenge our domination of photography. And so they said to Polaroid, we'll help you with your new film like we did with the others, but only if you let us manufacture some and sell it in our yellow boxes in competition with you. Well, Polaroid could not abide that, because Polaroid was a tiny company, Eastman Kodak was a Goliath, and they didn't think they could compete with them in the marketplace. So when Kodak didn't back down from that demand, the two companies went their separate ways. Polaroid went off to learn how to make negatives for itself, and Kodak went off to develop a competing system.
It's interesting you mentioned how Steve Jobs and Edwin Land similarities, and I always look, maybe there's people, because there are Polaroid people, there's Kodak people. It's almost like the Microsoft and the Apple kind of a difference. There's maybe a different sort of attitude related to taking pictures a certain way, or maybe a company's product and design and who they're marketing to.
Well, the two companies definitely had different philosophies and attitudes. You know, a lot of Kodak's actions and their attitudes were formed by their location. They were in Rochester, New York, and, you know, a bit isolated from the rest of the industrial world. And one of Kodak's executives wrote a book at one point calling it the Monroe County Syndrome, Monroe County being where Rochester is located. And it seemed to be an isolation that affected a lot of Kodak's thinking. They really believe they own the photography world, and acted accordingly.
The book is called A Triumph of Genius, Edwin Land, Polaroid, and the Kodak Patent War. Our guest today, Ron Feirstein. Now, Ron, I can't let you go without talking about your brother.
Sure.
Harvey. Now, we know, like, Harvey Feirstein or Feirstein. Is there a different pronunciation depending on which one you talk to?
It's one of the crazy things in life. You know, at some point, my brother started using Feirstein. I mean, our mother always pronounced it Feirstein. my father, obviously whose name it was, unfortunately passed away in the 70s, and so we never had a chance to confront him and get a definitive answer. But Harvey has evolved into Fierstein. I keep Fierstein, and since I work with him every day and represent him, we just confuse people left and right.
Yeah, but you sort of went your different paths. I mean, you were a lawyer, so you did your family proud. He probably was a struggling actor doing that kind of artistic thing where people are thinking, when are you going to get a job? And obviously,
you know, it's funny, Bruce, you mentioned that. You know, my parents were always very supportive of both of us, and my parents instilled in both of us a love of the arts. And so on. The only thing my father ever said about my brother's theater career was, get a backup plan just in case it doesn't work out. So my brother went ahead and he suggested, why don't you get a teaching license? So my brother got his teaching license. But when he graduated, there were no jobs available in New York City, so he was put on a waiting list. Well, the day in 1982 when Harvey won his first two Tony Awards for Torch Song Trilogy, we came home from the show because my wife and I went with him to the show. We went home from the show. We lived around the corner from each other in Brooklyn. And this is like 2 or 3 in the morning. I get into my house. The phone rings. It's my brother calling. He says, you'll never believe this. I said, what? He says, I just picked up the mail when I got home, and I got a letter from the Board of Education. I got a teaching job opened up.
Well, you know, it's all about timing and certain things like
that.
Well,
it is, but the point is, my parents were very supportive and but very practical, and they suggested that he get this backup. He did have the backup plan, but it turned out he never needed it.
Very good, but we enjoy what he does and what you do. I understand you obviously you help manage him and keep him. All that stuff that there's everybody behind every artist. There's usually somebody there who keeps track of the books and how things are going with contracts and that sort of thing.
Well, that's my role. And plus, I'm one of the producers of Kinky Boots. And I know we were just in Cleveland not that long ago. And I hope your audience has enjoyed it.
That's great. And the book that you've got out now is called A Triumph of Genius. I recommend people take a look at it. Edwin Land, Polaroid and the Kodak Patent War. Ron, thanks for sharing the time this morning. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Bruce. Thanks so much for having me.
Great.